Welcome to Tube Talk, the show dedicated to helping you become a better video creator so you can get more views, subscribers, and build your audience. Brought to you by vidIQ. Download for free at vidIQ.com.
Oh, yeah! Welcome back to another episode of Tube Talk presented by vidIQ. I am your host, Viper, the man about tech, executive producer of social media here at the IQ. And you know, small creators always want to know, how do I grow on YouTube? But a lot of times, they don't really pay attention to the nuanced things, you know. If it's not how to get 100 subscribers, or how to get 1,000 subscribers, or how to get 10,000 subscribers, or whatever the case may be, y'all kind of tune out. And I know sometimes I go a little bit more nuanced on the podcast, but everything that is said on these airways is aimed with the help of growing, helping you grow on YouTube. So I would advise you all to listen and pay attention to everything that is said on this podcast. I don't bring people on here. I don't say things on here if I don't know for a fact that they will help you in some way, shape, or form. You all have to remember, I've been doing it for almost 7 years now. So there is an element of experience that I speak from when I bring people on here, people who've been doing it longer than me, more successful than me, and I try to integrate my own experiences into the things that we are trying to relate to you all on this podcast. But today, my friend, who is a content creator, YouTuber herself, also happens to be a digital marketer, Desiree Martinez, is coming on here, and we're going to talk about how to grow and, you know, something that some of you all might be overlooking. So I would highly, again, recommend you pay attention, take your notes, and hopefully something instead of this podcast that you could take and apply to your own YouTube journey. But without further ado, let's bring Ms. Desiree in here and let's roll to the podcast. Welcome back to Tube Talk presented by vidIQ. And this week's guest is no stranger to the podcast. She's a friend of vidIQ, digital marketer, social media expert. Desiree Martinez is back in the building. Hey, Desiree, how are you?
Whoop, whoop. I'm super excited to be here, spend time with everybody, talk about my favorite things, all that stuff. Plus, any time with you is always a good time.
Oh, I am always happy to have you on the podcast. So thank you for coming back. So I was checking out the things that you've been doing on your channel recently, and you just made a video not too long ago called The Untold Truth About Winning in Social Media Today. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I really want to highlight is how you talked about the importance of community and building a community to have a sustained business, not only as an entrepreneur, but as a content creator, just about how community is so important for being a content creator and retaining that success and relevancy as a content creator. So explain to us a little bit about what you think about community and why it's so important to the content creator in today's climate.
That's really, like, it's such a big topic. It's such a big question. When we think about how we exist online, we have so many things that we're worrying about as content creators. We're worrying about, like, creating really great content that, like, the algorithm's going to like, that is going to be put in front of our people that we want to watch, not just our existing audiences, but, like, our future audiences as well. You know, like, what can we do to make every video better than the last? We're trying to figure out, how does sponsorship work with it? How does AdSense going to play a part in it? What is the creator fund going to do? Like, there are so many parts and things that people think about when it comes to creating our content. But the thing that's often overlooked by a lot of creators, especially creators that are, like, on the rise and trying to figure out what they're doing, is they forget about who they're creating for. So when you're talking about who you're creating for, it's like, who is this person that is, like, your biggest advocate, fan, that is, like, obsessed with what you're doing? And those are the people that become the leaders and members of your community. So when we talk about what is a community, these are the people that are, there's an audience, right? They're the people that watch. A community are the people that, like, are in the comments, talking to other people, answering questions, showing up for your lives. They're the ones clicking every single time that you put up something. They're the ones that are buying from you. They're the ones that do services with you. They're the ones that are cheering for you. They're the ones that are supporting you.
Right.
When you're, that's what a community is. And there's a really big difference between an audience and a community. And so video that you're talking about that I did, I had spent, I went to LA. I live in Michigan. I went to LA and I went to an event called the Information's Creator Economy Summit. And I live in like the, in this world bridge between the normal world of like marketing, regular business owners, people that run companies are just trying to figure out how like to build sustainable incomes for themselves and put their employees to work, and the creator economy, which is like where you and I exist a lot. You know, we're talking with like people who are creating businesses and brands and talking with sponsorships and all this stuff. And so when I went to the information event, it was very much playing that, that the bridge game of like, okay, what can I learn at this event from these incredibly large brands? Like we're talking about like the woman who's in charge of TikTok shop. You're talking about the CFO of Twitch. We're talking about the people who like lead Snapchat. We had huge, massive creators there that were talking about like the role Hollywood is playing in the creator economy and like what brands and things people are using. There's huge businesses there like Whaler, Jelly Smack, Spotter. There's so many big players there that are so prevalent and prominent in the creator economy. And so my objective was like, okay, what can I learn at this event from these big brands that are dictating what is relevant, good content online so that we can like transport it back to growing creators, new creators, as well as like small business owners, marketers, people that are just trying to like figure out how to use social media online marketing to build something sustainable. And the thing that stood out a lot, like you had pointed this out, is building a community. When you think about, even if you look at it from a smaller place, if we take ourselves off of the internet, community from a business perspective is really important because it's the place that you are a part of. Like I'm an active part of my actual town community. Like I'm in a local BNI. I go to chamber events. My kids play soccer and dance. I know people. Like I run into people at the grocery store. I try and volunteer through the Rotary. Like I'm part of the community to help make it better and build it up so that it can be more successful. And online is a totally great way to do that. And we as creators need to be thinking about what we're making for those people who are going to lift us up, build us up. And then ultimately the algorithms will do their job of finding more of those people to put our content in front of.
I think this is very important to talk about, especially for small creators, because a lot of times I hear complaints about how creatives feel that the algorithm isn't putting their content out there, or the algorithm this, the algorithm that. And we always try to tell them that you can't really think about it in terms of some type of arbitrary robot placing your content where it needs to go. The algorithm is just the people and what they respond to on YouTube. I like to say that the algorithm is a measurement of human behavior, and that is really how YouTube runs their algorithm. It goes where the people go. So if the people are into your content will be pushed to more people. Conversely, if their people are not responding very well to your content, then your content won't get pushed as hard on YouTube. But
the two factors that are the most important parts of the YouTube specific algorithm is user behavior and watch time, which an algorithm can't decide. Yes. The algorithm just takes those two data points and decide and helps find more people for your content to be in front of. You can't make content for an algorithm. You have to make content for people.
Yeah.
With like understanding how the algorithm works is going to work in your benefit.
So knowing that, like you just said, the two major points for the algorithm is user behavior and watch time, both of those go and lend highly to building a community, because the community is going to watch your video from front to back. A community is going to share your video with other people that they feel like might find value in your content. So as a content creator, when you can build a community that believes in you and trusts you, that will take you further in your creator career than any algorithm or any viral video will ever take you, because community is a strong, strong bond between you and the people that are a part of your community.
Exactly. I was talking with somebody the other day, and he has multiple channels with multiple millions of subscribers. And he was saying, I love my community. Like, I love people that watch my content, but I think about what's important for me as a creator. Cause in order to be a creator, there has to be some level of sustainability, and sustainability comes from money. Like no matter how we try and twist it as like YouTube educators or whatever. And I've always been bullish on this, which you know, which is like, if you can't make money doing it, it's going to eventually become less of a priority in your life. And it's going to make it hard for you, anyone, to continue doing it. And he made the point. He's like, I just need 1,000 people for my multi-million follower business to pay for things. 1,000 people, like, sign up for my membership, click on my affiliate links. Like, you know, those are the things that allow for him to build a sustainable business. Like he says, 77% of his income comes from sponsorships. And they're the people that come to him for sponsorships is because he's got these million something, whatever followers on his YouTube channel. But he's trying to get away from sponsorships. He wants to build up his own business, his own brand, his own product that has this front that it supports a local, or rather a localized buying audience. That is his community that will always advocate for him. And I think that that is something that's way more important to people. Like, would you rather, I'm making a shirt to wear to VidCon. Cause when we're recording this, it's April and it's going to say 100K with a dollar sign. And it's going to have like the more than 100,000 subscribers. Mm. I would much rather make $100,000 than have 100,000 subscribers because I can take money to the bank and pay for my life. I can't take 100,000 subscribers to the bank to pay for my life.
So let's dig a little bit deeper into that. So $100,000 is more valuable than 100,000 subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
And the question then becomes, as a content creator, how do you get to the point where you can make $100,000? And it goes back to community, because people who believe in you are more likely to spend money on you. This is why brands target creators, you know, with big follower counts and different things of that nature, because they feel like those creators have built a community. Now, sometimes that's right, sometimes that's wrong, because sometimes creators have bigger followings, but they don't actually have a community. They just have a large number of people that watch their content and then they're done. There's a difference between audience and community, and I think we need to really hone in on that. There are creators out there that have 1 million, 2 million, 5 million subscribers. And while they have a large subscriber count, they have an audience, but they don't really have a community. They are creators who have 100,000 subscribers who can drive revenue, much higher revenue than creators with over 1 million subscribers, because the creators with 100,000 subscribers have more of a community.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do they get those subscribers, right? Like, there's... You could have just had like a video that popped off. They could have been like from shorts. Like, I'm not saying that shorts followers are invaluable, but I mean, statistically, they're not. It's easy for anyone to just hit a subscribe button from a short, but and never come back and see anything that you do again. You could have been around for a long time, and like that's an old audience, like an old version of yourself, right? If you watch creators who are in that 100 to 500,000 subscriber range, like go look at their current view counts on their videos, and you'll get a better idea, like what percentage of their people that follow them, that subscribe to them, are their actual loyal fans. And I think that you'd be really surprised to see that it just depends on the kind of content they're making and like what they came in for. You can always tell when someone came in for something because that's the video that has the most views. And then all the other ones have just a lesser amount. So it's like that thing, like one of the people that I've seen this with is Jessica Stansberry. I love Jessica's work. I love her as a person. And she really blew up through COVID through having like how to make digital products and make a 6-figure income from it. But when she tries to make other kinds of content, they don't perform as well as like her making digital products content does. So it's a great way to kind of see what's going on with a creator and what they're known for. So again, there's what you're known for, and then there's what people will like buy from you and know you better for. And that's what we have to figure out how to build as creators. And it just takes time and patience. And that's one of the things that creators, I think, have the hardest time with.
So I think that's really important for smaller creators because, like you just said, building a community is about gaining trust and becoming known for something so that community can have that beacon to fall back to you for. Mm-hmm. And this is really critical because, again, when you go to a creator's page and you look at their subscriber count, but you see that their view counts don't match up with their subscriber counts, there's a discrepancy there. Well, the question is, why is that discrepancy there? Now, there's a bunch of variables that go into why that discrepancy exists, but there are other instances where creators with a certain subscriber count, when you go to look at their view count, they're either at or around their subscriber count, or they're exceeding their subscriber count because they are giving the audience, the community, what they came for instead of just trying to play off of a viral hit. A lot of it come back to trust and being consistent when you are uploading content to YouTube. If you're consistent in uploading, if you are putting out information that provides value, and you're putting out that similar type of information over and over again, that helps you gain trust, and that helps you build a community. And then everything else we've talked about up until this point, you could take that community and then translate them to doing other things that you want to do as a content creator. But it starts with you, creator, building that trust and figuring out what your lane is and where you can provide the most value, and then doing that on a consistent basis on YouTube. But not only building your own community, I think, Desiree, it's also important for creators to become part of other communities that are similar to the one they're trying to build up themselves.
I think it's part of, like, you've got to build your own community. And I think that you can't force your community to happen. Right. Like, it's going to happen kind of on its own. Like, you can have an idea of who you want to talk to and, like, who you're connecting with. But you'll find that maybe, like, what you're saying or doing, like, you might think that it's this person, but it might actually be, like, this person instead. And it's okay for your target demographic, your target audience, your desired community to change. And as far as, like, being a part of other people's communities, that's the best way to study. Like, what are they doing that's giving value to their community that you really enjoy or like? And you know, we all have that. We all have those creators that we just love to follow. And we don't know anything about their real life, but, like, we feel like we know them and that, like, we're connected and that we have, like, this intimate relationship, but there's all this other stuff that's going on. Like, so really, you can really just, like, take that into account when you're trying to figure out, like, how to build your community and what value to give to them. I really think another great measurement of, like, if you have a good community, is will they go where you want them to go? And I say this specifically about email lists. Like, you know, I'm bullish on an email list. I believe that while the YouTube algorithm is great and all the other platforms are great, I can't control that audience. Okay. I want to be able to control when my content is seen and how I can communicate with my audience. And so I like building an email list by offering, like, a too good to be free offer, like a freebie, a worksheet or something like that, to get them to come onto email list so I can stay in touch with them. And I know from my email list how much it's grown versus, like, how many views or subscribers I have, how much they take action. I can say the data, like, how many of the people are clicking on my videos, how many people are clicking my links, and who's giving me money. Like, how much money am I getting from my audience at the same time? So I think that that's another great way to know if your community is viable and have quality.
I remember something special happened on this podcast a year or so ago. We had Lawyer Petrucci on here. And when I had her on the podcast, she would talk to me about a course that she was offering for people to make money via live streaming, because that's what she does. Mm-hmm. So I think she was giving, like, a free seminar online or whatever. And I happened to attend that seminar myself because I was kind of interested. And what happened was, when I attended that seminar, there were other people who were there who told her that they were there because of her being on a podcast. They said, "Hey, Viper said that we should come check this out." So we went and checked it out. And it goes back to what you were saying about how do you get your community to kind of do what you want them to do. I mean, I've been hosting this podcast for, what, almost 2 years now. And I think I brought a lot of value to their listeners. I brought on guests. I've done it myself and different things like that. But over that period of time, they have grown to trust what I say. So when I suggest somebody and I'm like, "Hey, you guys should go check this person out," and they go do it, I was surprised. I was not expecting that many people to be there because of me per se in the podcast, but they were there. They showed up for her. So I'm like, this is pretty cool. And that's just an element of community, you know? When the community trusts you, they are more likely to do the things that you need them to do.
Mm-hmm. Being able to turn to your community is really important for lots of different parts. Wherever you are in your business, like, they can be there for you. And I think it's an important thing for us to remember. We rely on our community just as much as they rely on us. And honestly, we rely on them more, because without them, they don't watch, they don't buy. And it's okay. And I think the biggest concern that I've seen as of late that's hard for community as a creator with a community is, like, when you want to grow or change or do something different, the thing I've always detested about the YouTube algorithm is I can't be multiple things. I'm only allowed to, like, be Desiree, the social media girl for this channel. If I want to go to something completely different, like vlog or talk about parenting or put a lot of like my personal life into my content, I have to like go outside of that. I have to either create a whole new channel or go to TikTok or Instagram or something. And so it just becomes really frustrating. But if you have a really strong community, like they can be there to support you as you change and go do other things. You also might want to turn to your community to build something new. And they want to help you along the way. Like a good example of this is like, let's say, I talk with the Schlue family. That's Michael. And he was talking about how, again, he has multiple millions of brands. He has like this dance thing he's doing, but he wanted his family channel to be able to build up success through consistency. And he needed, the thing he was missing in his business was an editor. Like he needed like a person whose job was just to edit videos for this channel, because if he could show up consistently, they could get more consistent sponsorships and brand deals and more AdSense money. And so they turned to a company called Gigastar. So Gigastar helps creators who are trying to get the next level in their business, in their creator business, by basically helping them get funding for from their channel. So you borrow against essentially your future AdSense, and you're able to then work with, like, they have like a team of investors. It's like they call it an investor army who buys into it like one share at a time, and you're able to get an influx of capital into your YouTube channel. And he went and through that, and he did that, and he was able, because he was able to do that, he was able to not only turn to the investor army but also to his community to ask, like, hey guys, I'm trying to do this specific thing for my business, and I want you guys to be a part of it. And it's going to, not only are you going to help me now, but this is going to continue to pay you back because you get a stake in the success of this YouTube channel. And he was able to raise, I think at least over $60,000. That allowed him to hire an editor. And because he did that, there's all these case studies about how he's been able to maximize his income because they have showed up consistently. They've been able to get more brand sponsorships. And they've doubled their AdSense. Like, that's what community can do for you when in ways that you don't think about. Community is not just people that watch your content.
Absolutely.
Look, as YouTube creators ourselves, we've all been there. Sometimes the next video on your weekly upload schedule is right around the corner, but you have no idea what you're going to record. Well, this exact situation is why vidIQ developed Daily Ideas. It's our newest tool that can help provide you with up to 50 new video ideas every single day. Your daily ideas are generated by our AI, which analyzes your channel and the wider YouTube community to find trending topics with high view potential. With this new tool, you'll never run out of great ideas for new videos. You can try daily ideas for yourself today by downloading vidIQ at vidIQ.com.
The other thing that you highlighted in your video, you talked about AI and how sometimes people are using it correctly and sometimes people are using it incorrectly. Now, it's ironic that we're talking about AI because YouTube just released some guidelines for how creators need to let viewers know when AI is involved in the making of that content. And I did an entire podcast dedicated to that, but just for the clip notes here, right? Mm-hmm. If you are using AI to alter realistic events or alter parts of your content, YouTube is requiring that we check a box in our creator studio to let the viewer know that we have used AI to alter a realistic scene or event in our content. However, if you're just using AI in the productivity of the content, let's say you're using AI to create a script or generate ideas to make the content, that stuff does not need to be disclosed because it's just helping in the production of the content. It's not altering the actual content itself. But I think sometimes creators make the mistake of going too hard into the AI field when they're allowing AI to be the content. Because as you correctly pointed out in your video, even if you do use AI to assist you, you can't just let the AI do everything and not do any edits. Like when I go to ChatGPT and I ask it to put out or give me tweet ideas for our vidIQ account, almost every time I do that, it comes up with good ideas, sure. But I have to go in there and edit them to add some humanity to them, some nuance to them. And that's the type of things that I'm talking about when I talk about how creators, you have to use the AI, but don't just let the AI run the show. You have to go in there and add that human nuance to what the AI is producing so it can still appeal to a human person, because ultimately you're trying to appeal to humans and not a robot.
Yeah, I think that I said in the video, because I pulled up my notes on it, it says AI is a tool, not a replacement.
Right.
Right. And it's, AI has gone through such a weird like roller coaster. I feel like every year we have a theme for like how we do things in the creator economy. And last year is definitely AI and like what it is. And now we're going to be seeing like, okay, what's the fallout of AI and how are we going to humanize it and how is it going to work? Like even like AI can't be the answer to everything because it's still, it doesn't have an understanding of connection in a way that we'd like it to. Like even with vidIQ, like you and I love vidIQ and it has so many great AI components to it and data and analysts. Then the day though, it's not very good at writing titles for email or for YouTube videos. So you just have to kind of like still make those adjustments and things like that. I'm not saying it does a bad job. It gives you a great base, but you still have to go in and fine tune it to make it work right for you. You have to really think about AI as like a base for things, but AI has a lot of like really great components to it that allow for us to expand in a way that we never thought was possible and do things that we never thought was possible. Like we can look at simple stuff, like being able to use AI to take our YouTube videos and transcribe them. And then we have closed captions, or we can turn the transcriptions into blog posts to put on a website to help like maximize the reach of our content and support what we're doing as a business. You have components where I know that my friend Gabby, who does Glam Girl Gabby, she has been using AI to transcribe her videos into other languages. So she's got closed captions for other languages on her YouTube channel so that she can expand her reach, helping her build a global brand. And like in a really big way, like a way that we can use AI is with other languages. We've seen a lot of tools out there where like it'll take your voice and what you're saying and it like makes like a version like in the native language that sounds like you, is much more natural to what you're doing. And I think they even have it like where the mouth movements can change the way it's supposed to. And it's an incredible way to expand your reach because YouTube, I don't think they've released it for everybody, but you can add multiple soundtracks for yourself, like where it's not the closed captions are a different language, but it's like your audio, your dubbing is in different languages as well. Mm-hmm. And AI allows for you to open yourself up to like really incredible global markets. So and a great example of this is Adobe Row. Adobe Row allows for you to take your existing content that you're creating and repurpose it over onto Chinese social networks. There's a ton, like China and American social networks, like don't clash. Like we don't have access to theirs and they don't have access to and they don't have access to ours. But it's a great way to build a really incredible global audience because what Adobe Row has is the AI tools where they can take your content, transcribe it in with Chinese subtitles, and then you can upload that content, which is going to allow for you to build a new global audience in a place that you didn't know that you could do. You'll be able to get the creator fund incomes that come from those social networks because all of them pay their creators just like they do in the States. And you're also able to expand your sponsorship opportunities as well, because there's a lot of Chinese companies that want to have access to the American market and a lot of American companies that want to have access to the Chinese market. And so it's a way for you to get new subscribers you didn't have before or charge more for it. And to tie it back into our original point, which is talking about community, you get to build a whole new community in a whole new place that you never thought was possible. So AI is a catalyst for new opportunities. You just have to make sure you're using it smartly and effectively so that you can not sound like a robot.
Yeah, it's funny. When we're doing channel audits on the vidIQ YouTube channel and we run across channels that clearly are using an AI voice to dictate the speech of their content, and we're all like just turning our nose up like, this is not the way, this is YouTube, you got to put the you in YouTube, we need your personality, your uniqueness, different things like that. And that is something that AI cannot give your viewer. It can't give your viewer your unique personality, your quirk, your tone of voice. So there are places for the implementation of AI to work for you as a content creator for sure, but there's just other instances just naturally delivering the content that you should probably be doing yourself. And if you don't feel like you should do it, hire another human to do voiceover for you. But don't let AI do that, because that's not what it's there for. And it can't do the human nuance thing that you need to do to connect with a human audience.
Yeah, it's not hard to find a person to help you nowadays when it comes to what you're doing in the creator space. There are lots of VAs and project managers and stuff like that that can help support you in that kind of way. I mean, I don't know if I'm allowed to like push my own services, but my business that I am a creator for does that for people too. Like you create and we take care of all of the back end stuff that allows for it to work and function the way that it's supposed to. You just have to, if you can't do something Like, if you have time, or then don't do it. Like, focus on making really great content first that's going to be geared towards your community. And then you have these other options that are available to you as you figure out different systems and operations that are going to allow for you to add in these other components. But I do think that the thing that you can run into a dangerous slope for, and from a business perspective, is that when you are a creative, which is usually what the vast majority of people are when they're getting into the YouTube space, they're doing something creative, doing creative work. You can kind of slowly lose the creative juice in you, the more logistical, operational, detail-oriented things that take you from being creative. So having someone in your back pocket to help you with those things, so you can focus on creative, which is the product. Like, being the creative is the product, things that everyone sells, the thing that everyone comes for, the thing that you're selling, all of that, to help you continue to maximize your capability is a really important thing to consider.
Absolutely. So now, I kind of want to talk about something that's a little more in your wheelhouse, I know, mm-hmm. and that is building business. A lot of creators start off on YouTube with mm-hmm. the goal of getting their YouTube channel monetized. Mm-hmm. And it's all been well, but YouTube has thresholds. They've lowered them a little bit, but if you want to have your YouTube channel fully monetized, meaning you get actual ad revenue from it, you still got to get 1,000 subscribers, 4,000 hours to watch time, or what is it? I think it's 10 million short views in 90 days or something like that.
It's something crazy.
Yeah, if you want to be fully monetized. However, as Desiree knows firsthand, getting your YouTube channel monetized isn't the only way for you to generate revenue.
So even when you're monetized, it's not even that good.
Exactly right. Even when you're monetized, you're making pennies on a dollar, unless you're getting like a crap ton of views. And even still, it really is depending on your niche and RPM and all that stuff. But Desiree, I want to talk about things that creators can do when they're first starting out to kind of build a foundation for business if they want to make money. If that's like their main priority with their YouTube channel to make revenue, make money. Because again, obviously, ads isn't just one of the many ways. So what should small creators be doing at the very beginning of their journey to kind of optimize their channel to make money?
I cannot emphasize this a month. I don't care what you do. If you are a beauty creator, if you are a gaming channel, if you are a mom in your basement trying to figure out how to rummage through your kids' disaster stuff, I don't care if you're a dad trying to figure out how to like do stuff with cars, whatever it is that you are doing, you have to build an email list. You have to. And how you build an email list is not by saying, hey guys, go join my email list, because no one wants more email. They don't. If you think about like, what's the one thing you don't want more of? You don't want more junk mail. Like, I hate more than anything in the world, like getting mail, like physical, like paper mail that's like advertising stuff. Like, I didn't ask for this, but I, you know, the mail I sign up for, the mail that I pay for, like the membership stuff, I will always be excited to see that in my mailbox. Same thing applies to email. When you're building an email list, you have to start off by giving something that's like a too good to be free offer, like a way to connect with them. If you can build checklists, you can build ebooks, you can build like digital tangible products. Like, there are so many different things that you can do from a business standpoint, or even as a creator standpoint, that's going to allow people to connect with you. If you're a gamer, build a guide. If you are a mom, build a checklist. If you're a dad doing stuff, like build an ebook on how to fix something. Like, you can build a digital product that you can give away for free. Very simply, like through like a free tool like Adobe Express, and put that together and then use another free email tool like ConvertKit to build out that list. And you just put the link in your description and make it so it's like it's always there. And encourage people to go sign up for it when you're talking. I have kind of a formula I use. People are kind of against the formulas of things because they get stale or whatever. I still find it to be effective because I am growing my email list every single day. I've had over 20,000 people go through my email list. I've had people that have gone off. I'm fine with that. Like, if you don't want to be there, bye. But people have gone off. And so I have an active email list of about 8,000 people now. And I have a pretty solid open rate that sits between like 40 to 50%. And I'm just sending my emails every month where it's like, this is what we're going to go. This is what I talked about. Where I'm at my life. This is a video. Here's some resources to help you. And it's all because I give away these freebies, these free content planning worksheets, these 50 videos every business owner needs to make, how to make 100 pieces of content a day, like Gary Vee. Like, I have all of these freebies that I have made, and I'm always promoting one of my videos if I don't have like a sponsor that I'm promoting in that content, because I have to build my brand too. I'm my most important customer. And so that's what you need to build, because then you can continue to stay in touch with your audience, because having that control of your audience and a way to communicate and talk with them is where you're going to be able to do a lot of your selling and offer a lot of value to sponsors and so much more.
So talk to us a little bit more about having control of your audience, because we have seen just hell. I think it was a few weeks ago, Facebook and Instagram were both down, which means if you were big on those platforms, you had no access to your audience while those platforms are down. There have been times where YouTube has been down, which means, again, no access to your audience. So when these platforms aren't working properly, or they make changes that kind of affect how much access to your audience you have, you don't have that control over who is consuming your content. So talk to us a little bit more about that, Desiree.
When you're talking about control of your audience, it's basically I can control when and how I talk to people. It's sort of like we think about sports. Whenever, like the Detroit Lions, they're not a great team. They were great this year, but they and historically have not been great. We love the Lions here in Detroit. Like, we're here for them. They still have a massive holdover on their audience because of the community that they built, the town that they support, and they can stay in touch with everybody through social media platforms. They have the email list of everybody that buys tickets or is interested in tickets. They stay in advertising. Like, they have a real chokehold on their audience, so people never miss anything. And they do it because they have multiple ways to talk to their audience. And I know, well, that's a massive way. Like, well, Desiree, I'm not the Detroit Lions, obviously, but you are a person that is trying to build a brand and a business as a creator, and you want to be able to control your audience in case something happens. And maybe, and it does so many things for you as a business. Like, you get so many more sponsorship opportunities. You have a better chance of having success with your videos because you can drive traffic to it. I mean, the opportunities with it are massive. Like, you can just talk to them about something completely unrelated to your list. You can ask them questions, you can pull them, you can offer them services, you can sell your products, your merchandise, like anything that you want. That's control. When you can decide when you want to talk to people that care about your content, care about you, an algorithm decides if you don't do that. And again, it's a robot. It doesn't care about your feelings. It doesn't care about what you want. It just cares about user behavior. And the only user, almost the closest thing to guaranteed robotic algorithmic success is if someone has turned on the notification bell so that they see your content. If you go, they just so happen to notifications, they happen to watch it. Like, I have things I ring the bell on, right? And we've had that thing. Like, even if I look at it right now, I have my buddy Kevin Colby, I have that IQ, my friend Meredith, the Super Carlin Brothers, Gigastar, you know, Creator Insiders. Have I watched any of those videos? I watched one of those six videos. Because that was what hit me at the time when I was able to watch it. Like, that's the closest that you can get to having control of the algorithm and what YouTube does to offer, like, what content happens there. So that's what I talk about with controlling your audience. When you control your audience, you control not only your content being consumed, but you can control your income. And that is really important to me. And I think that the thing that's so hard about hearing this kind of talk is it's not sexy. It's not fun. It's not having a gold play button. It's not getting to be a creator, a featured creator at VidCon. It's not being talked about on all the channels in the way that Jimmy is or Logan or KSI or any of those people. But, you know, while those guys are doing hugely amazing things and paving the way and legitimizing our industry in a way that we never thought was possible, they're not the rule. They're the exception.
Right.
And I think that the ultimate goal of creators in this day and age is to, yes, build a channel that you are proud of, that can hit. Do I still want my silver play button? Yes. Do I have 39,000 subscribers? Yes. But do I still want it? Of course I do. That's an aspiration I have on my bucket list to someday be able to do. But I still show up to YouTube every single week as best as I can because I have value to give. I want to help people and I have a business to run. I have a family to provide for. I have a mortgage. I have a husband with PTSD. I have a kid. I have an autistic kid. I have another one with ADHD. I have a dog. I have a cat. I have bills. You know, I have a truck payment. Like, and because I show up on YouTube and I do the things I'm supposed to do and I control my audience, I control my income.
I love what you talked about with the YouTube and the notification bell and how that is like the only control that you have over your audience. But newsflash, that's not even giving you control over your audience because only a percentage of the people that click the bell actually get notified that your video is live. So you could have 2,000 subscribers and let's say 200 of them click the bell for your video. that doesn't mean all 200 of them are going to get that notification when the bell running. It just depends on how YouTube is working that particular day. Yo. So,
so I had a video. Okay. So the video I posted yesterday, secrets, it was the thumbnail. It's the ultimate truth about winning on social media. Secrets revealed thumbnail, whole thing. That's been up for 24 hours. I have 72 views. Browse brought me 38.9% and notifications bought me 19.4% of that. So that means probably 10 of my views came from that.
Yeah. We even did something on one of our YouTube videos recently talking about notifications and how many people showed up from our notifications. Yeah, it was like 1%. So 1% of a 1.8 million
subscribers. Browse is 1%. Where it's at. Like browse, like, and we can't even control that because it's all based on user behavior and view time. Like those are the things. I know we've talked behind the scenes and I've talked with like the team at VidIQ and they're like, can we make this a really value-packed video that people want to watch? Because view time is what matters most to us right now. Like that's hands down the objective of like where YouTube's necessity lies in. Mm-hmm. And it's always changing, which again is why you want to have control of your audience because you never get control of the changes. Before I had it, like when I started on YouTube, I had the best SEO strategy, the best. Like I showed up on searches for things, for so many things. Like I was on top of Google for endless amounts of videos. But then it was like, I mean, SEO is nice, search is nice, but now we live in the era of beastification and showing up on the home feed and browse. And so like my SEO strategy just didn't work anymore. And so I you can literally watch the data. Like it was a tank situation on my channel. It's like, oh, I have to adjust how I do things and like separate how I support it. But because I had my audience, because I had my email list, I was still able to communicate. I was still able to connect. I was still able to make money and talk to my audience.
You know, it's interesting to me because earlier you were talking about how some of these things don't get paid enough attention to because they're not sexy. And kind of a problem I've had on this podcast recently, creator probably not listening to the episode because they're not sexy topics per se. It's not how to grow and different things like that, because sometimes I get into the more nuanced aspects of being a content creator. But here is the rub. All of you all listening want to know how to grow your channel. But you only pay attention when we talk about getting 1,000 subscribers or 100,000 or 10,000. But here's the thing. When you are trying to build a YouTube channel, guess what you're doing? You are running a business.
They don't want to accept that either. Right. They don't.
Right. Why? Like, I don't know if it's just because y'all don't want to face reality, but you are literally building a business. And guess what? There are rules that have been in place for since the beginning of humankind that govern how to build a successful business. And a lot of that applies to building a YouTube channel. It might not be wrapped up in the buzzwords that you want to hear, oh, views and subscribers and all that stuff, but the same metrics apply. You need to get people to pay attention to what you're doing on here. You need to do certain things to get those people to pay attention to you and keep them trusting in you. You are building a business, creator. It is time to accept that you are a business person and you have to conduct yourself as a business.
I have a talk. I don't know if you guys are familiar. Matthew Hughes, big shout out. He's a really cool British creator just helping people use YouTube to build businesses. And he did a Creator Day event online. You can go check out the videos. You can buy them because the event's passed. And I did a session that was all about don't be a quitter. How to build a creator business you don't want to quit. And what I identified, because I studied, like we're out of the like quit era, right, of YouTube. Like that's what Q1 of 2024 was like, everyone's quitting, everyone's leaving, no one wants to do this anymore. What does this mean? And then like there were like 10,000 times more people reacting to it than there were people quitting. But I studied it and I thought about this a lot because there are people that have quit at different times unrelated to this, in specific things, like, you know, like Vanessa Lau, she's left because she was just burnout, overwhelmed. Elise Myers, she just quit recently because people were mean to her and her kids and all that kind of stuff. Like, that's unacceptable. There's just different reasons that people leave and walk away and take breaks. And I looked at it and I looked at what it takes to be a creator business. And it's a lot of unsexy stuff. But if you can find people that can handle the unsexy stuff, it allows for it to be sustainable and have longevity. So when you look at a business, like you can break a business into four parts. This is how you should look at it. Number one is creative. Like that is the number one most important part. Like it is the product you sell. It is the face of the company. It's what everybody sees. It's what everyone buys. It's what everybody's into. It's all things. It's your face. It's your creative. And it's all that stuff. The next thing that you need in order to have a successful creative business is operations. In order to make everything work, you have to have a strong person behind you doing anything. I compare this to a director and a producer for a movie. Director is a visionary. It's Steven Spielberg. He's guiding through all of the what's happening through the camera, what everyone is seeing and how it's all working. The producer behind them, they're the one that's like, okay, we have only this much longer to do this shot. We have to keep track of like all of the people. We have to make sure we're taking our breaks. We have to make sure the unions apply, make sure we're staying on budget, staying on time, like that everyone's where they're supposed to be, all that stuff. That's operations. And we have that same thing in the creator space. Did you upload on time? Did you mention the sponsor stuff correctly? Did you put the right lingo and jargon and hashtags and disclaimers in your description? Did you get repurposed? Is the thumbnail done the way that it's supposed to? Are we bringing in the right people to handle all the stuff? There's a ton that goes in operations, a ton. For me, my business, Make It More Civic, I'm the creative. I have a project manager and I've worked with her like, hey, this is what I'm doing. This is what I don't have the capability of doing. Like this is bottlenecking what I need to do to grow. So she handles that. Okay. Third part that you need to have an effective creator business is you need to have a salesperson. A salesperson is going to be the person whose job it is to make sure everyone is making money. They're selling the creative. They're managing the inbox for leads and opportunities. They're making networking. They're doing the connections. They're finding you money. They're bringing you opportunities for new things. Like, hey, check out GigaStar. Hey, check out Adobe Row. Hey, check out this. You want to make this product? Here's how we get it going. Like that's the person, the salesperson's job. That way you can focus on what you do. Operations can focus on what they do, and they can make sure that the money keeps flowing. And then the fourth thing you need is the paperwork guy. The paperwork person is in charge of like legal and accounting, your CPA. They're the ones that keep you safe financially. They keep you safe logistically. They make sure you own your stuff, make sure everything is on the up and up. Those are the four things that you need to have a creator business. These are not always full-time people. These are not always people that, you know, you deal with every single day. Some like my CPA, I talk to my CPA once a month, right? And she makes sure everything's paid, that she balances the books. She tells me when I need to make more money or spend less. She makes sure I get paid and my taxes are going the way they're supposed to. You know, a salesperson, that's the one part of my business I don't have. But in my year, my 2024 year, my goal is to have a salesperson by the end of the year to have not only help me with my creator business, but also help me with my agency with getting us leads. I have my operations person. I have a social media manager, a content creator. I have my project manager. I have my thumbnail company. I have the editor. My PM takes care of all that stuff. And all of them are contractors. So you, in order to make money, you have to invest in these different parts so that you can scale accordingly and function the way that you're supposed to. It is not just about making cool videos on the internet. There's so much more that has to go into it.
Yep.
I took you to school. 5 minute school. 5 minute business school.
No, obviously, creators that are just starting out on a journey, that some of that stuff is a little bit beyond them. And but again, it's something that they will have to grow into as they continue their journey.
Mm-hmm. But
as we highlighted earlier, there are certain things that you need to do at the beginning, like Desiree highlighted. Having an email list or building an email list is a very good thing to do when you're first starting out. If your sole primary objective on YouTube is to make money, because AdSense, it's not something that you should rely on. It's up and down. It's not even constant. I mean, when you work a 9-to-5 job, whether you're on salary or hourly, you know how much money you're going to make every week. As a content creator relying on YouTube AdSense, you do not know how much money you're going to make month to month.
No, I used to make $1,500 a month on AdSense. I now make like $225.
Ooh. So if you don't know how much money you're going to make a month, how can you rely on that as your only income if you don't know what it's going to be month to month? Nobody's doing that. That's living crazy. Nobody wants to live like that.
The best example of this, go listen to this episode, the Funded YouTuber podcast with Justin. He talks about how when Google and YouTube got hit with that massive fine from the FCC for violations for COPPA, the Child Online Protection Act, they were at Disney celebrating getting 1 million subscribers, and then they just cut off 90% of his income. That was it. Like, nope, YouTube made this change. It's kids' content. It talks to children anyway. You have to market, and there's no advertising. There's no commenting, nothing. Could you imagine losing 90% of your income for no, for, and it's like getting fired from a job. Like, you didn't see it coming. Like, right. And if you don't have other things in place to protect you and help you, you are screwed. Don't ever rely on AdSense, ever. Don't care about it. Care about building an audience and a community that will buy from you that you can control.
Absolutely. Desiree, any last tidbit for creators starting out on their YouTube journey before we get out of here?
Just love and obsessively the vidIQ channel to help you grow what you're doing as a creator. But make sure you're also learning about the business of being a creator, because it's just such a, it's two parts. And it's hard to manage being a creator and being a business owner, because it almost requires two sides of the brain. But I promise it's super necessary. If you want to do this, this is going to be your life, your goal, your gig. You have to do both.
You must. You must. Mm-hmm. Desiree, it's always a pleasure having you on the podcast. Thank you for joining me this week.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And listeners, thank you for listening this week. You know, your boy Viper will be back next week with another episode of Tube Talk presented by vidIQ.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tube Talk, brought to you by vidIQ. Head over to vidIQ.com/tubetalk for today's show notes and previous episodes. Enjoy the rest of your video making day.